Great to have you along today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here. Have you had the flu this season, or has someone you know had the flu? Chances are the answer is no, I guess. We'll find out as we talk with our guest today, Dr. John Tempty, a professor of family medicine at the University of Wisconsin Department of Family Medicine and Community Health. He chairs the Wisconsin Council on Immunization Practices, and he's wondering, too, maybe how the flu has impacted you and your family. I certainly am. What seasonal ailments have caused problems for you? That nasty cold that's gone around so many parts of the state? Give us a call, 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org, or go ahead and post on our Facebook page, title, The Larry Mueller Show. And we'd certainly love to hear from you. And Dr. John Tempty, thanks for joining us today.
Well, and thank you very much, Larry, for the kind invitation.
Well, always great to be able to talk with someone who really knows what they're talking about. And that's what we try to do here every day. And certainly, you know a lot about the flu. And I'm wondering, the season, the flu season, hasn't been as serious this year as in past years.
It has been very, very low this year so far across most of the United States, with some exception in Puerto Rico and in Arizona. But this is really a very, very low year. And I'll just give you a quick for example. Last year at this time, we had in Wisconsin alone almost 4,000 people admitted to hospitals with influenza. This year, we're at about 235.
4,000 to 235.
That's correct.
Wow. So why is it so mild?
Well, a lot of different reasons out there, but I think the best way to think about this is to consider whether or not people are pre-immune, or if they're immune going into the season. Last year was a really, really bad year, and a lot of people came down with flu, and on top of that, we had a vaccine that wasn't very well matched to what we were seeing. This year, we have a lot of people with pre-existing immunity from either getting sick or receiving a well-matched vaccine earlier this year. So there just isn't a whole lot of opportunity for the flu virus to infect people when you have a lot of immunity. The other component, I think, this year, which is important but harder to define, is the fact that, 2 days ago, I was outside running in shorts.
Yeah,
we've had an unusually warm winter across most North America, but because of the El Nino effect, and so I think these are all kind of going together.
And that a mild winter kind of what is it keeps people not necessarily so bundled up and all together.
Well, I think the big thing is it allows people not to be so concentrated indoors.
Yeah,
and to some extent, flu viruses tend to like cooler, drier temperatures. When it's warmer and moister, we don't see as much transmission going on.
Talking today with our guest, Dr. John Tempty, professor of family medicine at the University of Wisconsin. Great to have him along. You can join in with your own questions or comments. Have you had the flu this year, or did it impact your family in any way? Any other seasonal ailments causing problems for you? Call in at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org, or go ahead and post on our Facebook page, title, The Larry Mueller Show. We'd certainly love to hear from you. You had an update last week, you noted, I think, that the flu does seem to be increasing a bit in northeastern Wisconsin, and I'm wondering why that might be the case.
Well, you know, flu is always interesting in terms of seeing pockets where it tends to take hold and take off. And we don't have any control over that. And there could be a variety of reasons from are there more people who are not immune in that location, sometimes travel histories and so on. But that's going to be a question for which we don't probably have a good answer.
If you're not vaccinated, or even I guess if you are, how actually do you acquire the flu?
Well, if you're not vaccinated, flu is mostly spread by what we call respiratory droplets. So if you cough or sneeze, you basically send out a cloud of very small droplets within 3 to 4 feet of you. And if another person's there and happens to breathe that in, or, for example, touch secretions and wipe it in their nose or in their eyes, that basically is a transmission event.
You know, it's interesting. There's an ad now on television that I've seen a few times, and I don't even remember what the product is, but it shows someone coughing in a car and then this cloud. And I don't know if you've seen that particular ad, and I thought, man, is that the way it really looks?
And I have seen the ad, and I also don't know what the product is for, but it was actually quite effective, and that's a really good representation, because you get this cloud coming out, and for the first few seconds, if you're within that cloud, sure enough, you have a good likelihood. As a primary care physician, all I can say is I've been in that cloud before, and I have acquired things before. And hopefully, most of the time, I try and wear a mask if I'm dealing with somebody who is contagious and actively coughing or sneezing.
Yeah. Deborah in Monticello has something for us here. Deborah, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Larry. How are you this morning?
Great. Appreciate the call. What's on your mind?
Good. Well, I was wondering, I know the school system out here, there was a lot of flu going around, and my family caught it. I live with my daughter and their kids, and it went around our house, too. I was wondering, though, my question would be, is there a chance that people are realizing they don't have to go to the hospital with the flu and that maybe the number count is lower because of that?
Well, that certainly can contribute. First of all, let me take it back a bit. I'm not sure if we saw much flu going around earlier, but we did see some other viruses that look kind of almost as bad as flu.
Oh.
So adenovirus really was in a lot of activity in December and into January, and this other thing called human metapneumovirus.
Okay.
And these are both viruses that are equally contagious and make you usually as sick as influenza. They can have fever, fever and chills, a bad cough, muscle aches, and so on. And especially the human metapneumovirus, that's one where the cough can go on and on for 4 to 6 weeks. So I suspect maybe you saw something other than influenza.
Oh, okay. Because this was throwing up, diarrhea, the whole, usually what you consider would be the flu.
Yeah, and with
I caught the one you're talking about, I think.
Yeah, with influenza, we rarely see the nausea, vomiting, and diarrhea, so that usually is a different type of virus. But the other thing you brought up, which is an incredibly good point, is the role of schools and children. And children are the ideal mechanism for transmission. basically, they're in close contact, you know, from early September until the end of May.
Exactly.
And they're not as careful as some adults in terms of maintaining their secretions.
That is absolutely true. I was sneezed on many times. But I still love them. I don't care.
Thanks, Deborah.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, appreciate the call. Yeah, that adenovirus, I didn't know what it was, but I've had some close family members, friends that had that where they had a cough for weeks and weeks and hung on.
Yeah, and so what's been very interesting this year is in the absence of influenza, we've seen a lot of other nasty viruses make their presence known. But in particular, the ones that we know of causing more significant illness have been the adenoviruses and the human metapneumovirus.
Wow. Alice in New London, thank you for calling. Hello.
Yes, I was just going to comment that I've always thought it was peculiar, but I have never, ever in my entire life had flu, as far as I can remember, except for possibly, well, I know it was for sure, in 1973, we were stationed at an Air Force base, and it was the first year that they had, that I'd even heard of anything called the Asian flu, but it ran through the base like crazy. My husband and I got it, and I haven't had it, any kind of flu since. And but the other thing I wanted to say was, is people should be really careful when they grocery shop. Probably most flu is gotten in that fashion, because so often the cashier will lick her fingers before she calls out your money, or lick her fingers before she opens the bag. And I think people should call other people on that. I do. Because it's just like spitting on your money.
Well, what do you, is that? Alice, thanks a lot for calling. And lucky you, not having the fool for all those years. But what about her comments, Dr. Tempty, about people handling money or whatever, bags, whatever?
Yeah, you know, so influenza and other respiratory viruses can be easily spread if there are some of these respiratory droplets on the surface. And your hand, for example, goes over that. And again, you have to really touch part of your respiratory system. So your nose, particularly the lining of the eyes, are connected to the respiratory system as well. And transmission can occur that way. Also, thinking about even the handle of the shopping cart and the way we strategically place the infant seat on shopping carts so they can sneeze and cough on that. Now, the good news is many of the viruses don't last very long on surface, but some other ones, in particular one called respiratory syncytial virus, which is really a big deal for little kids, can persist on a surface for 8 to 10 hours.
Oh. So if you're going back to the let's say, the grocery store situation where you're putting your little one right in the cart, there's some potential there.
Well, and those are situations we're thinking about using, for example, a wipe with hand sanitizer.
Yeah.
Can clear that. I've noticed in my grocery store that they do have the sanitizer available on the entryway in. So this is picking up a little bit more. And anyone who's been to a hospital in the last several years will notice they have ample amount of hand sanitizer and signage up to warn people to not only cover their cough or sneeze, but also to use the hand sanitizer.
Mm. Marilyn in Brown Deer had eye problems for a couple of weeks, water, itchy, you know, those symptoms. And when those symptoms ended, she immediately got the flu. Is her eye problem related to getting the flu?
Well, to a small extent there is, but it's not one of the predominant symptoms. You know, I'm able to say that Dane County in particular has one of the best systems of influenza surveillance in the country. We have multiple layers by which we look not only at influenza and how much is out there, but also what symptoms go along with it. And we sometimes see low levels of eye complaints of redness or irritation, but those are measured in the 1 or 2% of people. So it's not a real common one.
Dr. John Tempty, Professor of Family Medicine at the University of Wisconsin Department of Family Medicine and Community Health, our on-air guest today. He's also chair of the Wisconsin Council on Immunization Practices. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Right now, taking a look at the flu season and colds as well with our guest today, Dr. John Tempty. You can join in at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Certainly love to hear from you. Alex in Madison, thanks for calling. Hello.
Hi, thanks for taking the call. One of the callers earlier had made a comment not about a respiratory virus, but more about the nausea, vomiting, and diarrhea. And I just noticed this year I've heard much more from my friends, especially friends with kids, that that's sort of what they've been dealing with rather than the respiratory and flu viruses. Just wondered if there are any comments on what that probably was. I remember a caller on a program a week or so ago was a nurse in school and made a comment about 6 kids in different areas of the school threw up in the same day.
Well, certainly we actually do a little bit of looking at that as well here in Wisconsin. And what we've been seeing is something called norovirus, which is a very, very common cause of, especially in older children, adults, a 24-hour flu. But in younger kids, that can go on for a few days. But tends to be a lot of nausea, vomiting, poor appetite, and diarrhea. And so we have seen kind of ongoing effects of this. One other virus out there called rotavirus, we see very, very little anymore because in 2006 we started using a vaccine for this virus, and largely we've seen that disappear. The good news is that particular virus ended up causing a lot of hospitalizations of infants, but we've just watched that one largely disappear.
Hmm. There we go. Thanks, Alex, for calling. Ron and Cashton, your turn. Hi, Ron.
Hi there. I know we bought tablets for our grandkids, and all the parents have these new iPhones. I don't have one. I still have a flip phone, but I'm wondering how much communicable transfer is from all of these phone pads that get utilized by multiple family members, and pretty soon you spread the whole contaminant through the family, or if that's a problem. I'll take my answer off the air.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's a good question, and the short answer is we really don't know. I don't think that's been looked at per se. But again, if there is active coughing, sneezing onto a device and then passing over to somebody else fairly rapidly, it is a potential source. But again, I think most of the cases is through being within that cloud we've talked about earlier. That's the most effective and efficient means of transmission.
Yeah. Thanks again for calling. You can join in, too, by the way, 1-800-642-1234. That's the number to call. Email us at talk@WPR.org or go ahead and post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. But call 800-642-1234. Get you on pretty quickly. Laura from Oshkosh got the flu shot. However, her children got sick before they could get the shot too. She cared for them and ended up getting the flu herself. So she's wondering why this happened, or how this could have happened.
Well, again, you have to emphasize that the flu shot covers people for influenza and influenza only. And so unless we have testing out there to demonstrate that the children actually had influenza, not one of these other viruses, it's hard to say. That being said, the flu shot is less than 100% effective. Usually, when we have a good match, about 70% of people who receive the flu vaccine will not come down with it if exposed. But that means about 30% do. We've basically done some recent research here in our department looking at those people who come down with flu even though they've had the flu shot. And what's interesting there is they tend to be less sick than people who don't receive the flu shot. Okay, so even if they get sick and have had the flu shot, they're not as sick. For example, there's a 40% reduction in fever, which is one of the important findings there.
And Laura, you know, here she is. She's a mom with it. She says children, so there's at least two involved. And if you were caring for two kids with the flu, you know, even though you've had a shot, you might fall into that 30% group just because of the additional exposure, at least I would guess.
Well, very definitely. And one of the things that we rarely talk about, but very, very important, is the older we get, the less virus we tend to see in secretions. And so if you're looking at the ideal person to spread virus, it's going to be those preschool and elementary school-aged children through adolescence. They tend to have an awful lot of virus in their nasal secretions and in secretions they're coughing on up.
Mm. John in Mineral Point has a question. Let's go there. Hi, John. Thanks for calling.
Hi. I got a flu shot last fall, and ever since I've had it, I have had extreme pain in my shoulder and down my arm and the nerve. And I read that if they inject the flu shot serum into your bursa and your nerve, that it can cause damage.
And you're absolutely correct. Fortunately, that's not a very common thing, but when it does occur, It can set up inflammatory response and lead to ongoing pain like that. Has that been evaluated any further by your regular doctor?
Nope. I've just been living with it so far, but it's getting to me.
Yeah, I think I would recommend at least being seen for follow-up on that. I've actually seen reports where with injection, unfortunately, the vaccine is supposed to go into the muscle, and on rare occasion, if the needle's too long or the person administering aims in the wrong area, it can actually go into that bursa or that capsule of your joint. And I've actually seen situations on ultrasound where you can pick up damage, see extra fluid, and so on. So I think the appropriate response is to pursue that and ask for further evaluation with your regular health care provider.
Yeah. Good luck, John. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. We have Mike in Madison up next. Hi, Mike.
Hi. Good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
A couple of quick questions. Isn't the virus, the lifespan outside the human respiratory system pretty short-lived? And if it's on a shopping cart handle, the UV lights are being pushed outside underneath the sun, wouldn't that effectively kill the virus within a few minutes? And then the next question is in regard to vaccines. I think my understanding is that the vaccine of an adult does not carry into the fetus.
Well, two excellent questions. First of all, you're absolutely right. The viruses, and again, it depends on the virus, but influenza is relatively short-lived. And once you have that secretion drying out, basically you're past the point of spreading. But we're talking in terms of minutes before we don't see live virus or transmittable virus. Now, remind me on the second question.
Well, it kind of goes
on fetus.
The mosquito virus that's causing the encephalitis.
Right.
You know, if they develop the vaccine, how would that ever get into a developing fetus that's only a month old?
That's a wonderful question. And in fact, it turns out that when we immunize pregnant women, there is a boosting of antibody, and that antibody is able to easily go across the placenta and goes into the fetus's circulation. There have been some very, very good studies now that show that if a mother is immunized with the influenza vaccine, that her infant has about a 60 to 65% less chance of coming down with influenza in the first 6 months of life. And that's very, very important. And so not only can we protect newborns by immunizing moms, but the other thing to keep in mind that influenza is terribly, terribly significant for pregnant women. We tend to find that pregnant women make up a disproportionate amount of people who end up being hospitalized during typical flu outbreaks. They tend to be disproportionately represented in intensive care units. They tend to end up on ventilators more than they should. And also, we tend to see, unfortunately, deaths of pregnant women.
So for pregnant women, should be getting the shots, flu shots.
Yeah, so the Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices, the group that makes the recommendations for the country, has for years and years recommended routine immunization for pregnant women with every pregnancy, doesn't matter which trimester of pregnancy.
There we go. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. By the way, you know, it is February. Does it make sense to get a flu shot now if you haven't already?
It sure does, because we're still seeing influenza coming, and basically we're on kind of an uptick here in Wisconsin. So we're going to be seeing more cases. Traditionally, when we've looked at this very carefully over time, we tend to see the bulk of influenza occurring in Wisconsin during the months where we have temperatures below freezing. And watching the calendar, we're starting to head in that direction. But we oftentimes will see cases of influenza, and particularly the influenza B, into April and sometimes even into May.
Mm. Let's turn to Michelle in Oakland next. Hi, Michelle.
Hi, Larry. I'm just wondering if you could address natural ways of healing. I take regularly a vitamin D3 and also use a neti pot, and I haven't had a flu bug in, I bet it's been 6 years.
Mm-hmm.
I have a chronic illness. I have rheumatoid arthritis, so, you know, I'm probably vulnerable. But I use those natural ways with along, of course, with washing hands regularly, that kind of thing. And I swear by it. I just think the natural ways are something that people aren't considering enough.
Well, I think you really hit upon the best natural way we know, and that's the good hand washing and then also covering cough and sneeze. There's very good scientific evidence for those types of interactions. Scientific evidence hasn't been as good for the natural remedies in terms of prevention or the use of neti pot. But that being said, it sounds like it's been working well for you, but especially keep in mind, you know, the avoidance, washing hands, trying to reduce the possibility of transmission.
And thanks a lot for calling. I appreciate your call. And you can join in, too, 1-800-642-1234. Give us a call. A question about the flu or colds. We've talked about a few things here. Nancy in Wild Rose has something about that stomach flu bug. How do you care for yourself when you get something like that?
Well, the important thing is maintaining sufficient fluids going in. These viruses tend to be short-term in terms of what it does to your intestinal tract, but it makes it so you're not absorbing some of the nutrients that you should be getting. And because of that, it causes diarrhea. So it's important to keep up with those fluids more than anything. We tend to recommend, especially for younger children, not to have anything that's real acidic in terms of foods or anything that is hard to digest. In the past, we've recommended things like bananas, applesauce, rice, and toast, but again, the principle is mainly keeping up with those fluids. When we look at people who get hospitalized, typically it's because of dehydration.
Oh, okay. So the dehydration, does what? It just weakens people? Or?
Yeah, it can weaken people. Of the very, very sick infants I've seen in my career, one of the sickest was a child who was had severe diarrhea. Ended up going from our clinic directly to the intensive care unit and ended up doing well. But it was mainly just this infant wasn't able to keep up with sufficient fluid going on in.
Mm-hmm.
And again, you see a similar situation, especially with older individuals or people with a lot of coincidental medical illness. They're much more vulnerable to that dehydration. As a parent, I've had the pleasure of having my children bring home in the past these, gastrointestinal viruses, and I have spent, a few nights not feeling very well. Fortunately, though, those tend to be very short-term in terms of healthy people, and meaning less than 24 hours of significant illness.
Yeah. Our guest today, Dr. John Tempty, talking with him about influenza and the cold season. Give us a call, 1-800-642-1234. Love to hear from you. Mary at Oshkosh shot an email in and was wondering about, she's exposed to sneezes all day long. People are constantly sneezing around her. Is there something she can do when she gets home in the evening to ward off potential illnesses?
Unfortunately not, is the short answer there. What we can tell Mary are people who are school teachers, people who are involved in clinical care of patients, in the first 2 or 3 years of their profession tend to be sick an awful lot. And as time goes on, you slowly build up immunity to a number of these things going out there. So for someone like Mary, for influenza prevention, really thinking in terms of getting that annual influenza vaccine is going to be very important. There are, again, for influenza alone, there is a medication out there that people can take after exposure to prevent influenza, but that's really important to have knowledge that it's actually influenza going on. And that brings us into all sorts of tests out there that can be done. And whether or not we use it prophylactically, we normally use the preventive treatment for people who are at high risk, for example, in long-term care facilities and nursing homes.
Mm-hmm. Well, there are other seasonal illnesses, as you were talking about, that have caused probably more problems this year than the flu.
Yeah, absolutely. And, for example, earlier this fall, we saw a lot of rhinovirus, which is the common cold virus. But for people with asthma, it can be very, very serious, sometimes deadly. I mentioned we saw adenovirus and human metapneumovirus.
Yeah.
And we've seen a lot of para-influenza, which tends to cause croup in little kids, which can be scary as well.
Becky in Fifield has a question here. Let's go there. Hi, Becky.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure. What's on your mind?
Well, it's not really a question. It's more of a comment. I was just saying that my family and myself, we don't get the flu shot at all. We have never gotten a flu shot, and we don't seem to suffer any of that. We may get minor upsets here and there, but very rarely. I work with kids every day in close contact as a coach, as a gymnastics coach, and I guess I'm real leery about going out and getting something like that simply because we don't have issues, and I don't want to introduce that into our system, but I'm wondering why might we be fighting it off better than and never having gotten the flu shot. What is in us that works?
Well, there are a whole host of things out there, Becky, that will mitigate influenza response. Part of it can be genetic. The type of genes that you have can affect that. We find kind of a wide spectrum out there in people. There are some lifestyle things. So we know that, in general, smokers tend to have a harder time with influenza than non-smokers. So we have, genetic, there are behavioral, there's also underlying health issues that people who tend to be immunosuppressed or have issues like that medically can tend to be more vulnerable. So, I celebrate the fact that you and your family have been blessed with good genes and not a whole lot of flu.
Yeah, that's great. Thanks, Becky, for calling. What about her asking? She asked about, or said, she commented that she's kind of afraid to get a shot because we've had such good luck without the shots.
Yeah, and, I think oftentimes that can be a personal choice. You know, if you look at the figures out there for the state of Wisconsin, we find that the utilization of influenza vaccine is actually very, very high for individuals over the age of 65. We see somewhere between 65% and 70% of people there. We're actually pretty good about immunizing younger children under the age of 4, but we're pretty terrible for school-aged children and young and middle-aged adults. We typically are somewhere between 30% and 40% for those people. So in reality, most people in those age groups don't get the flu vaccine. The sad truth, however, is that as of this morning, when I looked at the data coming nationally, there have been 13 deaths of children nationally from influenza. And so when we start thinking of or considering flu as being this very benign thing, in fact, every year we see children, and predominantly children who are not vaccinated, dying of something that's 100% preventable.
Yeah. Well, Ted in La Crosse wonders if zinc is helpful in fighting off the flu or fighting the flu.
Well, at one time, there was a lot of push in that direction, but the trials out there where you take a very unvarnished and unbiased look doesn't show that there is really any beneficial effect.
What do you do if you, or what should you do if you think you have the flu?
Well, first and foremost, if you think you have the flu, most of the time it's going to be a self-limited illness. And so I think the important questions are, you know, do you have other health concerns that influenza could be a problem for you? For example, respiratory, cardiovascular type of things, neurologic. So after that, then the question is, you know, are you somebody who tends to feel like you want to ride it out? Or if you're feeling very ill, that if you're seen and diagnosed within the first 48 hours of influenza, there are medications that can lessen the disease. But those medications are really important to start as early as possible. The earlier you start them, the more benefit you get. So this is where one of the flaws in our medical system lies, because I know if I'm feeling ill, I call the clinic, and oftentimes the triage nurse tells me, oh, stay home, take some ibuprofen, get fluid, and so on. And by the time I'm feeling really bad, those 48 hours have gone by where I could get treated.
Yeah.
So the important take-home is, again, maintaining good hydration, using, for example, either Tylenol or ibuprofen to help lower the fever will tend to make people feel better. With influenza, oftentimes there's going to be some muscle aches or joint aches, and the ibuprofen or acetaminophen can help with that. Important to, if you can, avoid aspirin, though, because aspirin and influenza can be linked, at least in younger individuals, with a syndrome called Reye syndrome, which can be pretty severe.
Oh. Well, this has been great. I really thank you, Dr. Tempty, for being with us today, and hope we'll have a chance down the road to talk about this influenza again. Thank you so much.
Well, it's been a great pleasure, and thanks again, Larry, for inviting me to join in.
John Tempty, Dr. John Tempty, is a professor of family medicine at the University of Wisconsin Department of Family Medicine and Community Health. He also chairs the Wisconsin Council on Immunization Practices. Great to have him along, and, you know, we'll have him back sometime down the road and talk with him again, I'm pretty sure. But right now, we're going to take a look at George Washington and a new book out called First Entrepreneur, How George Washington Built His and the Nation's Prosperity. Great book. Coming up next here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.